BSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Titanic is gone. 13, 14, 15, gone. But we're now April 19th, 1912. We're in the Waldorf Astoria, an extraordinary gathering, an inquiry by a senator, Senator Alden Smith, and special witnesses include two principals to help tell the story of what went on deck once the order was given to abandon ship. I welcome Charles Pellegrino, author of Her Name, Titanic, who's been my guide for many years on the Titanic story. There's always new details. And this time we're going to the inquiry at the Waldorf, where rooms were offered to the survivors, the wealthy survivors. J. Bruce Ismay was one of the wealthiest survivors. He was the owner of the White Star Line. Titanic was his premier ship and premier line, the big ones. However, his conduct during those hours as Titanic was going down by the bow remains in question. The other witness that day was a man by the name of Lightoller, whom Charlie Pellegrino introduced the last time we talked. We now come back to Lightoller and what he said he did in order to calm what he could and get people off on an upside-down lifeboat. They balanced for the hours waiting to rescue by moving back and forth on an upside-down lifeboat. Charlie, a very good evening to you. This inquiry at the Waldorf Astoria, what did it achieve? What did the audience learn from the questions given to Ismay and Lightoller in specific? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Some of the things that were learned were exactly how the ship sank, the location of ice, a lot of things that were not very bright that were done in leading up to the accident. And then, of course, with errors with the loading of the lifeboats in order to, there were terrible bottlenecks created by Lightoller. He wouldn't let women and even children in the end. He was down to separating brothers and sisters who were only about 10 and 12 years old and said, no, you're old enough to be a man. To a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old boy, you cannot get on the lifeboat. So, of course, these families stayed together. And the first quarter to one-third of lifeboats that went off from the Titanic were half empty. And that's when Lightoller came up with the idea, well, maybe if we call the lifeboats back and send people out through a gangway door on a lower deck in the front of the ship, and he ordered a gangway door open just before that deck began to go under the water, increased the rate of the ship sinking.
Right. So there were mistakes made in all directions. I want to go back to the 13th, the day before the iceberg. The iceberg was just before midnight on the 14th. On the 13th, did they know about the coal fire in the bins? Was the captain aware of that?
Yeah, the coal fire was being put out, and one of the ways they were putting it out was to shovel coal away from coal bunker 10 on the starboard side of the ship and throw that coal first into the boilers. And as a result, you had coal is a rock, so the ship had a slight list to the port side even before it struck the iceberg.
Did that,
interestingly, saved a lot of lives because you had a wound on the other side, she began sinking on more or less an even keel.
Did the fact of the coal fire come out at the Waldorf Astoria hearing?
It did come up, and at the inquiry and at the British inquiry also, they didn't want the coal fire to be talked about too much. It was one of the things that contributed to the speeding up of the ship, lighting more boilers, because they wanted the Titanic to arrive on Tuesday night, under cover of darkness, just in case the New York Fire Department was required to go in there. But they did get the fire out before the impact with the iceberg. And Park Stevenson, one of the researchers, has pointed out that that is why the ship sank on an even keel. The coal was emptied from that side, and the water was coming in on that side, and the rock-heavy port side and the water-heavy starboard side sort of balanced out so that the lifeboats could be lowered from both sides.
However,
otherwise, she would have listed very heavily over to the side of the damage, and you couldn't lower lifeboats from the port side without them getting stuck against the hull of the ship.
However, you have established that the heat from the coal fire and from the boilers was so intense, the lower portals were left open, and that contributed to the speed of the sinking. Do I remember that correctly?
Yes, passengers along F deck and E deck, they were leaving the portholes in their staterooms open. And in fact, the passenger Krikorian, third class passenger, all the way down in the lower decks, the wind was beginning to come in. It was bothering him, and he decided to close the porthole. And being lower down to the ocean's surface, he looked north before he closed the porthole, and he noticed about almost a half hour before impact this sawtooth pattern against the horizon of dark shapes eclipsing the stars, and guessed, oh, those must be icebergs. But he had no sense of danger. One of the strange things is that the Titanic made it about halfway into the ice field before hitting anything. The odds are they would have seen a berg over to the port side or over to the starboard side, but the first one they saw was less than 10 seconds away and directly in front of them. That is so improbable, it never happened again.
The inquiry. J. Bruce Ismay is answering questions. He owns the White Star Line. Was he asked about the lifeboats? Was he asked about his own escape in collapsible lifeboat number 3?
Right, in collapsible C. It was one of the last boats going, and he described the people standing around as they could not have been calmer as if gathered in a church, that there was no pandemonium. Some people have been speaking of pandemonium, but we have survivors like George Rimes and 17-year-old Jack Thayer. Thayer said there were gunshots, there was pandemonium, panic, and there were too many people between him, 17-year-old Thayer, and Ismay's lifeboat. Thayer said he didn't blame Ismay for jumping into the boat at that moment. He saw a warning shot go off about 6 inches from Ismay's ear just before Ismay jumped in the boat. He said, I would have jumped in myself, but there was no way I could get to that lifeboat at that time.
What did Ismay say about him getting in a lifeboat when it was supposed to be women and children?
He said he couldn't see any women and children near him, that everyone was calm, and he would have just been one more person dead on a spur of the moment. He just stepped into that lifeboat himself, and that there was no panic. He tried to deny the kind of panic that was going on the decks. In a way, socially, he kind of took the bullet for White Star management.
The inquiry at the time, did it doubt him?
Oh, yes, yes. And the media and everything, Ismay became the person who was blamed for everything. And in fact, he did have a lot of blame to take. He was probably the guy pressuring the captain, and, he was the guy with his foot on the gas pedal, very probably.
Lightoller made the mistake of opening a portal, a gangway, that led to the speed of the sinking. But Lightoller had a second life. You can tell the story, Charlie. How did he wind up at Dunkirk?
Yeah, on the Titanic, he made many, many mistakes. He was not the guy he wanted to be near in the middle of a catastrophe, unless the catastrophe was on the overturned lifeboat with people all around that boat after the Titanic sank. Once he was out in the water in the worst part of the emergency, he managed to save a lot of lives. He learned something along the way because he was the guy who saved many lives during the Battle of Dunkirk. He made more than one journey across to get people off the beach in France as the Nazis were advancing and bring them back with that little fleet he helped to arrange that went to save as many British who were trapped in northern France as possible. He became the hero of Dunkirk. In the movie Dunkirk, there is a character that's based very much on Lightoller, the man who goes back with the lifeboat to France. That's Lightoller.
The summary of the changes that were made after the facts were established at the Waldorf Astoria, were those credited to Senator Smith's inquiry, or was that the British board that imposed the lifeboat rule and all the others?
Right, both inquiries, and so rules were changed in the United States, and there was all night listening on radios for distress calls, not just one guy doing a shift. Ironically, the all-night radio vigils actually saved 17-year-old Bob Ballard on his first oceanographic expedition so that he could go to the Titanic. The Titanic is what saved his life.
Charles Pellegrino, his book, the new book, twice as long as the original edition, is coming out next year. Her name, Titanic. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.